Welcome to The Creative Switch, the podcast inspiring the sensibly successful to switch on their unexpressed creativity for a more fulfilled life. Are you someone who is feeling a little unsure or underconfident in your creative endeavours and looking for support? Today's guest, actor, artist, coach, and poet, Rebecca Lacey, has plenty of examples of how you can find the right people to help. Having shifted through many different creative disciplines and put the emphasis on each one at different times due to life's ebb and flow, she always has an outlet for her creative expression. Her story is full of wisdom and inspiration. And if you're looking to turn your creative inspiration into action, don't forget to listen right to the end of the episode and catch up with my creative adventures. This is where I share the challenges I encounter and how acting on the nuggets of wisdom I've learnt from my guests and applying those learnings is helping me to move forward in my own creative projects. This time, find out about how I've made space for the creative passion which is closest to my heart by remembering some advice from author Melanie Cantor about the best place to look for support. Before we get to that, do remember to head to my website, nikkivalance.com, where I've gathered even more insights and advice from my guests in your free guide to 7 common creative challenges and how to overcome them. And now it's time for some creative news in The Edge. We love the image of a lone creator, the writer at their desk, the painter in their light-filled studio, the musician lost in their composition. But here's the truth. Creativity doesn't thrive in isolation. I don't think support is optional. Through my exploration of creative life, I've actually found quite the opposite. In the UK, Arts Council England's Let's Create strategy makes this clear. They fund many projects. They help people and organisations build creative ecosystems, and that financial support enables libraries to become creative hubs, sports events to be co-created with disabled artists, and communities to be invited in to collaborate. When I wrote my article investigating the question, what do we need to say yes to creativity? Support came back as one of the answers, and there are many ways to find it. Musicians know this too. Help Musicians UK has shown that grants, mentoring, and mental health support are lifelines in an industry where careers are precarious. For all of us, it's about knowing someone has your back when the road gets hard, and knowing that bouncing off each other can produce ideas you would not have come to on your own. And at grassroots, initiatives like Creative Lives prove that even small pots of funding for community radio, local partnerships, or microgrants can generate opportunities for collaboration. Support matters because creativity is relational. Ideas grow when they're witnessed, challenged, and nurtured. Without support, the myth of the solitary genius becomes a trap. With support, creativity becomes a shared act of resilience and joy. So when we invest in creative people through policy, through community, through friendships, through love, we're cultivating situations where imagination can flourish and where creators can continue to give us the stories, the sounds, and the visions that shape our world. If you want to find out more about any of these initiatives, you can find all the links mentioned in the show notes. And for a more in-depth exploration on the art and science of creative living, join in with the conversation at The Bold Types on Substack, where you can find out the other pillars needed to support creative life. Or why not message me on Instagram at Nikki_Valance. Whether you're just starting out and wondering whether you should even try, or already in the thick of pursuing your creative passion, I'd love to hear from you. And listen next to hear all the creative life twists and turns of my guest, who has found support for herself and her work in all sorts of different ways, places, and communities. Actor, coach, artist, and poet, Rebecca Lacey. Hello, Rebecca, and welcome to The Creative Switch. It's so fantastic to have you here.
Thank you so much, Nikki. Thank you for having me.
I'm sure we're going to have a great conversation. And what I love about this, I often don't know the person I'm going to talk to. I know a little bit about you, obviously, but I don't know much, and we've never met before. So I find it really exciting to discover what we have in common and talk about creativity, and it's going to be wonderful. But maybe you could explain something about who you are and what you do.
Okay. I'm Rebecca Lacey, and I'm primarily an actor. I've been an actor since I was 15, a professional actor since that age. And I'm also a poet, an artist, and a life coach, and also a mother of two. You mustn't forget that. That's the most creative job there is in the world.
Definitely. Brilliant. Okay. So if you started professionally acting at 15, do you remember the point at which you recognised that was important to you, or that you were a creative person?
I think I knew when I was about 4 that I wanted to be an actor. Both my parents were actors, so I think every child looks at what their parents do for a living and go, does that look like they're having a good time? Or that's the worst thing anyone could possibly do with their life. So I looked at my parents and thought, I really like the look of what they're doing for a living. So I do consciously remember that. I also know I was always playing a lot in my own world. I was always picking up bits of things and making something out of them. Very conscious that I was always painting and drawing, as do most children. Mm-hmm. I would say. I think we all forget that as we grow up and we say we're not very good at something. Yeah. So I can consciously remember really paying attention to the crayons and how they felt and the paints. I love those paints in the pot, you know, with the lid that stopped them falling out as you tip it over. And just, I love the whole thing of it. I love the colour. I love the feel of the paint, putting the paint on the paper. And as I say, remembering about 4, thinking, I think I'd like to be an actor. That looks like fun.
Wow. So it's a long road to get from there to doing what you're doing now. So maybe you could give me a little bit of a feeling of perhaps the twists and turns of the decisions that you made, or the kind of the places that you think are the turning points in that journey to get to be you today.
Okay. So I was 15 and I was at school, and I didn't tell anyone that I wanted to be an actor, because this is the other thing that people don't quite get about actors a lot, is that a lot of actors are introverts. Mm-hmm. So it's not that you want a lot of attention. You don't. It's just that your inner world is creating other ways to express yourself because you're an introvert. And sometimes, like for me, the play of it. So what would happen if that happened to that person? Well, look at that woman crossing the road. She's got a bent back. I wonder how that feels. That sort of intense play and observation of how people are and how they interact was what was happening to me. So basically, because both my parents were actors, I didn't want to tell anyone. I didn't want any pressure on me to go, you want to be an actor? Is this what you want to do? You must be good at it because your parents do it. I didn't tell anyone anything, including my parents. And in the summer, when I was 15, I went off and signed up to, it was like an amateur group, at the Curtain Theatre in the East End. And I went off and I just did it. And then I told my parents that I was doing it and they could come and see the final show. They brought along my godfather. He came as well. And I remember their faces afterwards. They were all just open-mouthed because nobody knew I wanted to be an actor. I wasn't like life and soul of the party. I wasn't going out all the time. So they were all really dumbstruck. and thought I was great, basically. They just thought, oh my God, you've got something here. Now, it so happens that my godfather was a casting director. So doesn't that help? So my godfather said, I'm casting something at the moment. Would you like to come in and read? My parents were, well, she's still at school, so we don't think that's a terribly good idea, but okay. So then you can see what it's like to really face all the rejection. Well, of course, I went back 3 times and I got the job, and I ended up, and I ended up at 15, 16 during my mock GCSEs, having to get a car outside school, go off to the studios, again, trying not to tell anyone. Always telling my friends, oh, I've got toothache, I've got to go to the dentist, or oh, I've got doctor's appointment. You know, things like that. I was always making up rubbish things. I didn't want all the fuss and attention.
Yeah.
So that was the first big turning point. Then I ended up staying on at school, did my A-levels, and then I got a job. I'd say the next big turning point was then not going to drama school, not getting into drama school, getting on the shortlist for a couple of places, but not getting in, and then getting a job at the National Theatre as an usher. So I became an usherette for 2 years and got my theatre education there. Mm-hmm. So I saw so many shows. I saw so many actors. I met some brilliant people. The usherettes and ushers in any theatre will all be creatives of some sort.
Yeah.
They were all musicians, actors, writers, composers, artists, incredible people that I met, friends for life.
Yeah.
So that experience was like another big turning point for me to realise I didn't have to go to drama school. I taught myself by observation.
Yeah.
By what I liked, what I didn't like, what I thought was a good performance, what I thought was a good play, not just what everyone else was saying. That was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I was very lucky, had really good agents, and I've had a really good career. Touch wood. I think the next big turning point would be when I got pregnant.
Yeah.
And you can't do that job anymore. I went from television series to television series, and I was doing a series called Monica the Glen, and I found I was pregnant. And they said to me, we'll write it into this storyline and you can come back with a baby if you want. So there was a big turning point for me there.
Yeah.
Do I continue my career, have a baby, you know, on set, 6-week-old baby, probably breastfeeding back into Winnebago or whatever? I've seen people do that. I've seen actors do that. Did I want to do that? That was a big decision. And I decided not to do that, but to commit myself to having the baby, being with the baby, and seeing what happened. And my husband's also a freelancer. So I didn't work for 7 years, is the bottom line. I had two kids. But I knew when I made that decision to not go back to Monica, I knew what I was doing. I knew I was possibly closing the door for some time. So, and my husband was away working lots of that time, thankfully. He earned more money than I did. That was an easy decision in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
So what it left me with was, what do I do as a creative person when I can't do the thing, my career that I've loved for the last however many years it had been? It's really the only job I'd known. What do I do? So a friend of mine was talking to me about she'd been to see a life coach, and this life coach had encouraged her to run a marathon in New York, and she'd met her life partner all within 6 months. So I was like, wow. I'd always been somebody who people come to when they have problems.
Mm-hmm.
I've always spent a lot of time helping people, I suppose. Not because I'm such a great person, but because I really love listening to people. I love people's stories. I love how interesting everybody is. I mean, you must think that, Nikki, because you wouldn't do this job if you didn't.
You mentioned the word stories. I think it's something that's obviously running through from when you were a child, creating those stories and all the observation. And I think one of the things that makes a life coach a good life coach is that you have to listen to what's really going on. And sometimes it's not the things that are said. It's sometimes the things that are not said, or it's you're picking up the person's energy. So when they go up, in their energy, you think, ah, that must matter more. Let's dig into that bit to see if that's going to open up the next path or the next idea. So it, as you say, because I was trained as a coach as well, I think you are always naturally able to do it. And I'd be interested to hear what you think about this. The training just solidifies the skills you have. And it goes, okay, yeah, you've always been able to do this. But if you do it this way with these techniques and this method, then XYZ can happen, rather than it just being you just being a friendly ear to a friend. The other thing I would say I'd love your opinion on is that the difference between a friend who's a good listener and a coach is you're not bothered in the slightest which direction or which decision the person takes. So if I'd been coaching you at the point when you said, oh, I'm having a baby, I don't know whether I should stay an actor or not at this point, I wouldn't have cared which way you went. Whereas maybe someone in your acting world might go, what are you doing? Don't do that. Because they might have been scared for you. So that's why I love it. You can give that distance, that perspective on the situation without being attached to it.
I totally agree. And that is a joy in itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
You feel the joy from the other person that you don't know them because they're just telling you all these things and then sometimes very specific and narrow things. I love getting into the detail with people about what do you really mean by that? And as you say, what they're saying isn't really what's valuable. It's what the intention is and the unpicking this onion layers of their personality or what it is they're trying to get to. But yes, I totally agree with the training gives you that. I trained with a company called ITS. I did 6 months with them on a foundation, and then I went and did another 6 months as a master. And after that, I felt, yes, I had those natural skills, but they did give me techniques to approach people with, different skills, different ways of listening that I hadn't thought of. And it was invaluable, I would say. And I loved it. So, yes, I totally agree. I think training is essential in anything because it gives you confidence apart from anything else. You go, oh, I've got this qualification. I can do this now.
Yeah.
You are distanced to your client. As you say, you don't mind which way they go. And often you can say, you said you were going to do that and you decided to do that. That's so fun and interesting. Whereas if it's a friend and you've spent a lot of time with them, and then they go back to that partner that they've spent the last 10 years slagging off, and then they leave them and go back to them. You feel, whereas as a coach, you just kind of go, wow, that's interesting. Why are we doing this?
So there's a practical decision that you were making because you had decided that you wanted to be around for the family. And also financially, you were in that situation where a slightly more stable income was coming in from your husband. So you had this new profession that you're working on. Some people do that. Some people leave acting or leave their creative passion and profession that they've taken up early on in life and they change direction and they never go back. But that wasn't you. So you've got a little bit of a portfolio of things going on at this point in your life. So talk to me about that return as well as keeping the coaching going.
So I have worked with a lot of actors as a coach. I've worked with a lot of creative people as a coach. Acting is like a bit of a drug. So you
imagine
it's really hard to find another job that really satisfies that same urge when you've loved it. If you haven't loved it and you've had a lot of pain and hurt from it, then it feels a relief to give it up, or it's okay to give it up. But acting for me was, I was used to being around actors. I felt at home with actors. I missed them terribly, and I missed the world of creating with actors when I'm not doing it. I still feel like that when I'm not doing it. I think most actors feel like that because it's a crazy job. You wouldn't do it unless you had a kind of mad passion for it, a kind of addictive love for it. And it's really not the thing that people think. It's not about the attention and the fame. I mean, it is for some people, but that's very few. It's more the creative connection that you have and the playing that you do and the fun that comes from that playing and the results you get from that and that enjoyment. So it wasn't difficult for me to, in the 7 years that I didn't act. I didn't consciously give up and go back.
No.
For me, it was like, I'm still acting. I'm just looking after the kids as well.
Yeah.
But I knew I wasn't acting, you know. I was going to the theatre whenever I could. I was still in touch with all my friends. I was really on top of what everyone was doing, what was happening, what the new plays were. I was really, really connected. Wow. So I think I never gave up is the thing.
No, no.
So it wasn't like going back.
No. I guess it's a bit like when you are an actor, you're not, unless you're in a long-running role, working all the time.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. It's just it was a longer period of not being out there, but you were still doing all the things you would have done if you'd had a gap in between jobs.
That's right. That's exactly what I felt it was like. It was like a really long gap where I produced and raised two gorgeous children. Lucky me, you know.
Yeah,
But I do think acting is a full-time, part-time job, to sum up what you just said.
Yes, definitely. So did you just start or actively talking with your agent or engaging in auditions?
Yeah, it was basically when my daughter went to school, when she was four. That was when things became a lot easier and I could go to audition, or I could start to leave her places. People could pick her up and various things like that. So yes, things did come in over the years where I didn't work. They were just away or touring or things that I wasn't prepared to do. I just said to my agent, I'm ready for work. Can you look for some more projects for me? So as I say, it wasn't like starting back again, although I was nervous. It was just a continuation of what I'd always done.
Yeah. Okay. So then there's another turning point.
Well, the next, I mean, it's all life and death, isn't it? The turning points, I mean, it's always like one door closes, another one opens, you know.
Yeah.
Well, the next turning point was my mother wasn't well. And during all this time when the kids were at school, I was coaching and acting. So I had two jobs and that worked together very, very well, because I was calling the shots on when I was doing the coaching, and then my mum got poorly, so I had to stop everything and look after her. So that's what I did. And then I thought, I can't do this full time without doing something that keeps me sane. And she didn't need like 24-hour care or anything like that. She just needed taking to the doctors. She needed me to do the shopping. She needs me to do all those kind of things. Mm-hmm. So I approached Richmond College, which is where I live, of art, and applied for foundation in fine art.
Which was always there waiting for you to pick up the paintbrush again from when you were a little child.
Exactly. Because I thought, I was sitting there, seeing, like, what have I always wanted to do? What have I always wanted to do? Well, this, let's give it a go. And I went for the interview. I mean, this is the other thing I need to say to you, Nikki. None of these things, I make myself, oh, this is what happened. I was terrified at every single step of every single thing I've done. I've been terrified. Mm-hmm. It required enormous amounts of courage and talking around and around and around it. Should I? Mm-hmm. Anyway, I did it. I got onto the foundation course. I was older than anyone else by 30 years. And I had a brilliant year. I had a fantastic time. Unfortunately, during that year, my mum passed away.
Okay. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. And I got a job at the Royal Shakespeare Company whilst I was still doing my foundation. So, I mean, that's life for you, isn't it? So I just juggled it all. I went down to Stratford-upon-Avon and I came back for my final show. I asked for 2 days off in my contract. Again, this is so me. I didn't tell anyone why I wanted the 2 days off. I didn't even tell my agent. I said, can I request these 2 days off? She was like, okay, fine, fine. She has to have these 2 days off rehearsal. And I just came back up because I had to be there to put the final show up for the exhibition for the foundation. Again, I was like, oh, great. I got a distinction. I did my foundation. Fine, I've crossed that off my list of things I need to do. Opened a show in Stratford-upon-Avon, da-di-da-di-da. Then time goes on. I was at the Royal Shakespeare Company doing Merry Wives of Windsor for 8 months. But you have a big chunk of time off. And then, well, they're doing other shows. I was only in the one show. I was able to juggle everything. I didn't really think much more about art because I thought I've ticked that box. I'm not really going to do a degree because I don't think I can spare the time or the money commitment. But then a friend of mine who's an artist and runs a small art gallery came over and said, can I see your foundation work? So I showed her and she said, this is great. I want you to do an exhibition. And I kid you not, as she was talking to me, I hid behind the chair, our armchair in the living room, because I said, no, I can't do that. It's terrible. My work's terrible. I can't possibly. I was literally shrinking. She was going, what are you doing? I said, I'm so sorry. I just feel so, I can't do it. Anyway, of course I did it. With her encouragement, I ended up selling half the work. I was like a frightened rabbit the whole evening.
I can imagine. For someone who's introverted, I can imagine that being an absolutely terrifying experience.
It was. I've had exhibitions since. It's still much more terrifying than any first night. You know, I've played to 2,500 people. Mm. It's much more terrifying, you know, in a small art gallery. Private view and people going, what is that? Or you feel that's what they're doing. Anyway, and you're on your own. That's it, as an artist.
And you're being you as well.
That's right. You're really you. You're not hiding behind a character, which is what I love to do. I like to hide behind things. But it's really you out there. And also, as an actor, you've always got other actors around, which is the joy of it. I never understand people doing one-woman shows or one-person shows. You go, how boring. How boring. Anyway, whatever. Cut to next thing you hear me doing. I'll probably be doing a one-woman show. But anyway, yes. So that was the next thing. So then COVID hit, which meant I had a long time to explore the art, which is what happened for a lot of people, I think.
Yeah, absolutely,
So I had a lot of time to explore art and I did two online exhibitions. So for me, that was the perfect solution because you didn't have to front face anybody. And again, they sold really well. People seemed to be coming back with beautiful comments about them and how it was cheering them up and all the lovely stuff that was happening during lockdowns, as well as, of course, all the disastrous stuff. And also during that time, I looked into poetry because I found it very consoling. And one of the things I'd always done is write poetry. So back when I was with the crayons, I wrote my first poem when I was about 6 or 7. You know, at school when they go, and now I write a poem about a tree. But I've continued to write it all through my life as a way of getting things off my chest. So during the lockdowns, during COVID, again, I explored. I did a couple of online courses, found that I really enjoyed it. And subsequently, I've got 2 pamphlets. I won a competition, various things. I've been on many courses now and I absolutely love it. So now here I am with 3 solo exhibitions, 2 group exhibitions, a residency that I've just completed, and 2 poetry pamphlets. I mean, how the hell did that happen?
I was going to say, and what next?
Well, I don't know. But what I think it'd be really interesting for people to understand is that it's not because I want lots of attention about it. I find it really difficult to show people my poetry and share it. But at the same time, why the hell am I writing it if I don't want anyone to see it? There's that moment that happens where you go, actually, I'm just saying hello. This is how I feel. How do you feel? That's all I'm doing.
I think, because I've thought about this a lot as well, I think it's about connection.
Yeah.
You talked about your acting, actors in general, being able to express themselves through that because they don't necessarily always feel able to do it as themselves. And I think these are all ways of existing as you, but expressing and connecting with people. I listened to Emma Gannon, who had a very successful podcast on creativity and interviewing lots of really interesting people. She then moved from this medium into Substack. She was already a writer anyway, but she moved into Substack, I think about 3 years ago. What she was saying the other day was she remembers a meeting when she was with her publishing team for one of her nonfiction books. And she was asking the question, why does the industry feel that we need to be always relatable, that word relatable? And she said, Because actually, when we're creating from within ourselves, and we shouldn't be free to create. If it happens to then be relatable, then it will sell. And of course, that's the problem. So you've got the business side of creativity,
yes,
where if you're producing something, it has to appeal to people, because otherwise it won't sell. But on the other hand, it comes from within. So there's that turning point, isn't there? And I have had exactly the same issue as you. Mm-hmm. I want to create for myself, but I don't just want it to be in a vacuum. I want it to touch people and people to react to it. And I want to know what they think. I almost don't mind whether they don't like it. I just want some kind of reaction, because it's a conversation between me and them. So, but it's very, very difficult if you're not well known in your field, whichever field it is, to start out and to say to yourself, well, how do I sell myself? Particularly if you're introverted, I don't want to big myself up. I'm not someone who goes around showing off. How on earth am I going to reach people who need this? Because I've made it not just for me. Now it's out in the world. It's for other people too. So how do you square that circle with your poetry, for example?
I find it extremely difficult. So what I do a lot is, so recently we had a group show, which was fantastic, by the way, called Many Actors Make Art. And there were 70 actors who also paint beautifully. And everybody was different. And it was wonderful. I also took along my poetry this year and a pamphlet. And I sold it there to people who were interested. It was a byproduct. But in fact, what happened was I was starting to talk about the art I was making, which I've got very into rubbish. Nature and rubbish are my themes. So I've made this huge, huge piece, which was about 5 foot by 3 foot out of Amazon packaging. And I'd made a piece of ocean. It's called Trust in the Rolling Ocean. So I'd made this huge blue piece of Amazon packaging. And my poetry collection is called Things Fall Apart. So they were related. And I just had them on the side there. And then as I was talking about the pieces that I'd made for the, you know, out of the rubbish, I then said, if you're interested, I've written some poetry about it. It's kind of related, not related. You may not like poetry. And then saw how people reacted. And then most people went, oh, that's interesting, because people like a book sometimes. People like something to hold on to while they're taking in the visual. I sold loads there. Absolutely loads. I also printed up on some beautiful paper some of the poems that I thought were relevant and framed them, and I sold all of those. So it was really interesting to weave the two things. I also give them away. I give them to people because if I'm having a conversation, I met a friend yesterday and she said to me, oh, how's it going, blah, blah, blah. And she said, I really love your poetry, you know. And I was like, well, I did have a new pamphlet out. And she was like, oh, would you send it to me? I said, of course. So it's just about if somebody slightly reaches out or shows an interest. I haven't got very good yet at pushing that forward. But I will get there because I'm slowly getting more confident about it.
Yeah.
And as I get more confident about the work, and more people say to me that really, I really loved that poem. It really moved me. It really touched me. It affected me. I'm going, okay, that's not about my ego. Oh, I may have helped somebody. It's like sitting and having a little chat with them.
Yes.
That's how it feels. I'm hopeful to get more confident that what I'm saying isn't total rubbish and it's actually touching people and maybe making a little difference to the day. And another person says, contacted me and said, I have it beside my bed. There's a few poems that I read every night. So I hold on to that. I think every creative does.
Yeah.
You hold on to those nuggets of positive feedback that keep you going. I'm literally just moving to the next step. So the next thought I have is about maybe trying to find a smaller gallery that I can do perhaps a poetry reading and have my art around me.
Yeah.
That's what I'm now thinking vaguely I might be looking for now. This could happen in a year's time. It could happen in 3 months' time. I'm not a fast mover in that respect because I need confidence. I need slow confidence, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I do. There are things in our lives that we find easier and others that we struggle with. But there are lots of skills we all need to have. And I think probably today more than ever, we need to know who we are and how we can communicate that to people.
Yes.
But if you're not naturally someone who likes being the centre of attention or is comfortable standing in front of a crowd, however big or small they are, being you as opposed to being a part, you've recognised it's a gap and you thought, well, I can get better at this. You know, we can teach ourselves things that we're not naturally aligned to. But what I was interested in there, which I was thinking of when you were talking about the moments when the art was on the wall and people were picking up and they were liking that experience of the two blended together, was sometimes the selling is hard when we're trying too hard.
Yes, exactly.
And actually, if you're in the right place and it's the right audience, it's not that you had to sell. They were interested. That, as you said, they were taking a step towards you rather than you having to kind of reach and pull them in from outside. They were already there because they were interested.
Yes.
And I think that's the key, I think, is making sure that you use your creativity to think, well, where are the people who this matters to?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But I did fall into a trap after my first exhibition of going, you know, there was a certain type of painting, drawing that sold really well. I'll just do more of those. Well, that doesn't work. Because that's not come from you. So you really have to just follow your own instincts and then with commitment, this is what happened this last time. With commitment, I then explained what it was.
Yeah.
And the people seemed to really love it that I had made a piece of ocean out of a load of old rubbish. They seemed to get that thing. Now, those two really important things to me is nature and recycling, you know. And there I was, just because I had this crazy idea of collecting all the rubbish, what am I going to do? Oh, I think that looks like an ocean. Instead of going, no, it doesn't. I went, right, get that down quickly do it. You know, so I make the work very quickly.
Yes.
But I find it really hard to make that transition into putting it out there. I find that a very big leap, you know.
Yeah, fair enough.
And everybody's different. I've been coaching now for 20 years and that's what I love, is how completely different everybody is. You must love that too.
Yeah, I do.
I'm much better one-to-one. So this is great for me. And coaching is great for me because I can really tune in to the one person, the one thing. So when I'm writing poetry, it's just me and my thought, my idea that can happen. So what happens when you open up to an exhibition is, I think most creatives or artists are really tuned in. So you get too much information going on and you get paranoid. So the thing I'm really trying to learn, going back to what else the gap in me is to just calm down. And as you said, just calm down and sit back and have confidence that what I've made is what I wanted to make.
Yes.
Regardless of what anyone else thinks.
Yeah.
If one person says, I like that, then you've won.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Then you've won. It,
there are different phases. And I think sometimes I do despair a little bit when people say, if you're a novelist, you have to write every day. If you don't write every day, you're not a writer. And I think to a certain extent, I agree, because it's about being close to who you're trying to be. But actually, writing isn't just writing. And I'm sure everything you do isn't, so painting isn't just painting and making art isn't just making art. You have to have the conceptualization phase. And often that takes years sometimes for something to brew. And then you have the spark and go, ah, that's it. That's what I'm going to do. And then you have the making phase. And then it's the communicating with the outside world. So there's so many different phases. And as you say, the timelines, it's like an accordion. They're going in and out all the time.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. I think it's about being in practice. You know, as an artist, that's what you talk about. And there's a wonderful artist called Agnes Martin. She painted lots of those beautiful grids with very thin white lines. They're very, very beautiful hypnotic paintings. And if you watched a video of her working, she spends most of the time just looking at the wall like that. Hours and hours looking at a wall. And then she moves. That's the opposite of what I do. And I do think, as you're saying about novelists, it's not necessarily being, oh, I get up and then I work from, you know, you do hear this about lots of novelists, don't you? I work from 6 a.m. till midday, and then I've done 10,000 words and aren't I marvelous? It's about sitting in practice, which is awareness, isn't it? It's just about being aware, which comes back to listening. So it's about listening to yourself, listening to what's going on, listening to the outside, what you're trying to do, being in practice. So as a writer, it's actually about not just getting the words out, because, I mean, you could write 10,000 terrible words, couldn't you?
Yeah.
So it's about sitting with what it is you want to do on a daily basis, sitting with yourself, sitting with your practice, whatever that is for you, on a daily basis, I suggest. And just having the knowledge, or even saying to yourself, I am a writer.
Yeah.
I am writing.
Absolutely.
This is what I do. Mm-hmm. Okay. How do I do this? You know?
Yes, absolutely.
It's the connection with yourself as well as trying to connect with other people.
But what I love about the creative world and all the conversations I've had with people is that there's two things that are true that are completely opposite to each other. One is everyone is unique, and the other is creativity has been, across all disciplines, a very clear set of ways of being and doing that help you do it.
Yes.
There's commonality between all of the different disciplines.
Mm-hmm.
And then even more than that, it's a way of living, it's a way of thinking. And as you say, coming right back to what you started with, if you can be playful in whatever your discipline is and you focus on the moment that you're in, rather than worrying about, will people like this? Or I'm making it for this type of person because, or whatever. As soon as you start going too far ahead of yourself and getting too serious about it, I think actually it shuts it all down, and you can't create then, because your reference is the wrong, you're looking at the wrong thing.
Yes, absolutely. Well, also you're not, it goes back to listening again, doesn't it? You're not listening to yourself. You're listening to what other people are saying.
Yeah.
And actually, I am a great believer. I've got two creative kids, so I'm constantly trying to make them aware of what they have. There's only ever us that is us. There's only you that's you. There's only me that's me. Our biggest thing that we can sell is our uniqueness. That's why I don't understand the Botox thing. I don't understand wanting to look identical to everybody else. I understand fashion. I understand expression. I understand wanting to fit in, but actually not noticing that the one thing you have that no one can take away from you is your uniqueness, you know, your own print, your own DNA, your own unique way of seeing the world. Nobody else sees the world like you do.
No.
And I think a job of a creative of any sort is to try and go, I see the world like this. How about you?
Yeah.
And if they like what you're doing, they'll go, oh, I like that too. I mean, I'm sure you've had this experience when you read a great book, or you read a poem, or you see a painting, or you sculpture, or whatever it is, and you go, oh wow, that's really touched me. And I don't know why.
Yes.
That's the joy of it. I don't know why I'm so moved by that, but it's touched me. Yeah. In the solar plexus, I'm gasping.
Magic.
It's the magic. Mm. And that's something you can't manufacture. That's something you can't Botox your lips into place.
I think it's true also. Somebody else that I've been reading recently, I love her writing. Her name's Hannah Ash. She's actually one of the guests on this season. She was a musician who became a music teacher, who became a head of music, who then burnt out, who then said, what else do I love? Okay, I've always loved making, designing, and I quite like, we've just done our house up. Okay, maybe interiors is my thing. So she trained in that and she was doing that. But alongside that, she started writing almost for herself, really.
Mm.
And as a way of communicating her journey, she then found she loves the writing part of it as well. But what she said was really interesting, which is when she's writing something that she has just an idea and goes, oh, that would be a good topic, I'm going to write about that. And she gets up early in the morning and it just comes out of her head. Those posts that she puts on Substack are the ones that resonate with everybody. The ones which have just come from inside and she just puts them out there.
Yeah.
The ones that she thinks about a bit too much, she goes, actually, I should be talking about these disciplines or this part of my job because that's what everyone wants to know. Da, 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 da. They don't really land because she's, I guess, like you say, thinking about what things should be like and not following her own instinct.
Yes. I would say that I, for 6 months earlier this year, I got up before my family, and as soon as I got up, I would sit and spend an hour on poetry. And I would write sometimes 3 or 4 poems as they came to me directly from that sleep state, the subconscious, mm-hmm. and straight out. And those are the ones where I have got similar thing. I've got the nugget, a truthful nugget of what it is I want to say. And they're the most interesting.
Yeah.
And when I look back at them, I'm like, did I write that? Was that me? Because my conscious brain is now gone, well, that's a silly thing to write about. Nobody's interested in that. You know, but when I look at them, I think, that's a great idea. What a crazy, wild concept. Conscious brains, our conscious intellectual brains, are so good at analyzing and intellectualizing and criticizing that if we can get that out of the way, it's brilliant. And then we're back to that childlike state, and then we're just playing and having fun.
Yeah.
And just being crazy, you know, somehow. Yeah.
I had a crazy dream last night. I was in a cafe stroke music venue of some sort, not one that's a real one, where everyone who was there was just a creative person. I knew a couple of people who had been in a band in the 70s. And I thought, I recognize you, but I don't know who you are, but you're really famous, but you're just having a coffee on the side. And then there was another person who was also famous, who just sat down and started writing music with Robbie Williams. And then one of them came up to me and said, oh, should we just do some writing together? Let's write some songs. And I was like, yeah, absolutely mad.
That's fantastic. But what that says to me is that you're, through this podcast and through everything you're doing, you're looking for like-minded people.
Yeah.
Because actually the creative process is very singular, and you're on your own. And actually you just sometimes need to say someone to say to you, that's great, or keep going, or I love it, or let's just have a quick discussion about that, you know. And so you're in the bar with all these musicians and you're going, you know, let's do this together. Let's just jam, you know.
So, anyway,
that's fun.
I wanted just to ask you before we finish what you're doing at the moment. You've obviously just finished an exhibition. So what's the current projects you've got on?
Okay. So I just finished this residency, which was a very interesting thing for me because it wasn't to sell. So there wasn't an exhibition at the end of it. There was an open studio. So I had a gallery for a month. I was artist in residence, and I created what I was interested in, and I pursued it in the space. I mean, it could have been one piece. I could have had an open studio, which had just one piece of paper in the middle of it and nothing else. As it turned out, I had a lot of stuff. I took the idea of the concept of the Amazon packaging and the ocean, and I made a huge, big bonfire of Amazon packaging, and I threw blue paint all over it. I then had some birds coming out of the ceiling, so it was called Rising Ocean Skyfall, and I created this 3D piece, which I'd never done before. So it was very exciting for me, and I made another piece out of bin liners, compostable bin liners. I was trying to say something about microplastics, how we're eating microplastics, we're growing microplastics, you know. But I made this quite beautiful piece out of bin liners, and very, very big again. It's about 8 foot by 5 foot because I had the space to do it. So in answer to your question, what I'm working on at the moment is taking all those ideas. I've honed it down now, which is that my practice revolves around nature and rubbish. And I use color to express my ideas and bring them to life. So a lot of my interest now going forward is about us noticing the humble, small stuff that we throw away. I'm absolutely fascinated in things that decay, because decay is an essential part of life. And so I think there's deep joy in sort of curling edges and cobwebbed corners as much as there is in bright pink peonies. And I'm realizing, or I have realized, that I love life in all its forms and find all of its parts equally interesting. So I'm pursuing my theme of decay, resurrecting things. So I've allowed some apples that were from Wales, which is a particular place special to me, to decay. And I'm going to be painting them and finding new ways to bring them to the attention, so that we don't just go, oh, that's a dead apple, that's a dead leaf, oh, it's in my way. Let's try and notice the small stuff. I'm moving into a bigger studio now, which is very exciting for me. And I'm going to try and explore ways of expanding that theme into pieces that people can either put on their walls or I can make some photographs of or something, because at the moment the pieces that I made in the residency were huge and wonderful for an exhibition, but nobody can take home a piece of that.
No.
So no. I'm trying to now be true to the idea of what I've found, but find a way of containing it, I suppose, and making it reach out to people.
Yeah.
So
it's a bit like high fashion on the catwalk goes to stuff we can actually wear.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly it. Without losing any of my integrity about the idea.
Yes,
so that's what I'm going to do. And I'm trying to weave my poetry into it all the time, because text is so important to me, and not just my poetry. I mean, like Dylan Thomas or whoever the poet is I fixated on at the time, because I'm mad about Dylan Thomas at the moment. So I'm trying to pursue those things whilst also my own poetry, trying to get my own poetry into a different place.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not quite sure how I'm going to do that, but that's okay. You know, I don't quite know what I'm going to do. But I know I'm going to stay in practice. Mm-hmm. I'm going to stay in the zone, as we used to call it, or in flow, and keep pursuing it, because there is a point. I think sometimes and I'm sure a lot of creatives feel the same. What is the point? Mm. And that's when it all dips. It doesn't matter what the point is. The point is you're going to do it anyway, so just do it. You know, don't waste time. Yeah. So I'm going to be doing that, but also I've got an acting job as well. I'm doing a film. I've got a fantastic part as a very strange character in a Welsh village coming up. So a real character part, which is fabulous. So it's looking good. Things are looking good.
Yeah, fantastic. That sounds amazing. Well, I'm so delighted we could finally get a date that worked for us both, and that we're talking today. Hopefully we'll talk again. If you have another exhibition, I love going to see things and be in places that I wouldn't necessarily be because of my own discipline. I love that cross-fertilization of
absolutely input. Absolutely. But it all goes in. It all goes in. Even for stuff you don't like, that's what I'm always saying to people, just keep going out, absorb all the art or read all the stuff you can. You know, particularly obviously if you find an interest that you're in, like I'm saying, like Dylan Thomas at the moment. I've now read, I think, every Dylan Thomas poem there is, because not because I'm an obsessive, crazy person, but because, well, maybe I am, but because that's my area of interest at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that will lead me somewhere else. You explore, you go out to galleries. I'm always looking at what's around me.
Mm-hmm.
And aren't I lucky? Aren't I lucky to have my body fit, healthy person? Yeah. Touch wood, I'm touching everything.
Yeah.
And you never know when that's going to change. So you have to do it.
You have to do it.
Do it. Because life is so short. I mean, I know everybody says it, but as you get older, you go, oh my God, if I'm not going to do it now, I'm never going to do it.
I tried to start doing it from before that point. I don't know why I had some inkling that I knew I had lots of things I liked. I couldn't decide what I was going to do.
Yes.
I set out on one path when it wasn't satisfying me anymore. Like you say, I wasn't obsessed with that one thing. I'd moved on to something else. It's taken me a long time to allow myself to live creatively. But now that I am, I'm thinking, goodness, I've got a lot to pack in. I'm just going to get on with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and that's the challenge, I think, once you get to a certain age, you go, God, I've got so much more to do and not enough time to do it. How am I going to do it? And you have to, I have to stop myself from standing in the room, just turning around and going, what first? And just go, oh, just pick one thing. It doesn't matter what it is. One thing that you like and just move forward on it and enjoy it. And if you're not enjoying it, you don't have to keep pursuing it. You can stop and go, I took something out of that. I'm going to stop that now. And I'm definitely going here now.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's all okay.
Yeah. I love that. What a brilliant thing to end on. Thank you so much.
Thank
for
you,
being here
Thank
today.
You.
Now, my favourite type of conversation is one where we end up helping each other to understand what supports us creatively and sustains us in our lives. I loved to hear how Rebecca overcomes her fears at every stage as she heads into the unknown with any new discipline or project. and that she trusts that her work will find support from the right people. That it is an invitation to a conversation with no expectations attached. To follow her work or to get in touch, the links are in the show notes. Now it's creative adventures time, and I promised to share some advice from celebrity agent turned best-selling author Melanie Cantor on one of the most effective ways to feel supported. If you've listened to actor Martin Spendlove's episode in season 2, you'll know I've been looking at ways to explore my passion for performance. I talked then about getting stuck trying to find a way to fit this aspect of my creativity in amongst my other creative projects. I think I may have found a way and will tell you all about my plans for 2026 in a moment. Things are shifting into the next gear for me now with the novel writing, and I feel that sense of inner connection with the project, which helps me to trust my instincts. If you think you may have heard this before, you're not wrong. It's all too easy to let our egos or others' expectations become a barrier to making progress. And whilst, at the moment at least, I'm on the right track with my writing, the same can't be said for leaning into the performer in me. Yeah, sure, I did enter Bring the Drama, the BBC programme hosted by Bill Bailey back in 2024. And I wasn't shortlisted, just so you don't go wondering. And I did have several months of voice training with a singing coach last year. But aside from recording the podcast and delivering my talk on the importance of play, I've not experienced the same drive to perform as I have had to write. That's not to say I don't enjoy making the podcast, of course. As a quick reminder, if a podcast is a creative adventure you'd like to begin, check out the links for Alitu, my podcast recording and editing software, and Captivate, my podcast hosting software. I really couldn't do it without these great, easy-to-use tools. Back to performing, or more accurately, not performing, and making plans to change that. I talked last time about taking on less projects this year and making more space to let my creative ideas breathe. I've settled on novel writing as the main project for the first half of the year. I've also decided on 2 soul-enriching projects, one for the garden and one a bedroom makeover. But whilst I'm happy putting energy into these, there is a nagging feeling that I've been avoiding those opportunities to perform more, and that I need support to move it from being a longing to a doing. Awareness is half the battle, they say, and I realised that I needed to reconnect with Nikki, the performer. Then I remembered the advice Melanie Cantor gave us. She said, "You have to believe in yourself, and then others start to believe in you too." It struck me that the first form of support comes from within. If you listen deeply to yourself and ask, "What do I really want to do? What's stopping me from taking action?" And if the answer comes back as a lack of confidence, as it did for me, then you ask yourself, "What would happen if you backed yourself?" For me, Nikki the performer replied, "You might be a little bit rusty, but you can do it because you've done it before many, many times." So, with all the accountability I will get from saying this here now, I am dedicating the second half of the year to exploring ways to get back on stage and then doing just that. What creative passion are you sitting on? What's holding you back? Why not find support in the creative community by subscribing to The Bold Types on Substack, or say hello and share your thoughts on Instagram? The links are in the show notes. I honestly love to hear all about your progress on your creative adventures. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Creative Switch. If you enjoyed it, please leave a review over on podchaser.com. And if you've got any questions, please let me know on Instagram at Nikki @Jennifer_Valance. Tune in next time, where we'll be discussing the life-affirming, confidence-boosting and empowering nature of community singing, and much more, with choir leader extraordinaire, Xenia Davis. Until then, keep creating, and remember, why survive when you can thrive?